Welcome to Three Cops Talk. On this podcast, three active duty police officers discuss behind-the-scenes stories and real-life accounts of what it's like to be a cop. Every episode, you'll get an inside look at the challenges and dangers they face on a daily basis, as well as the triumphs and inspirational moments that make it all worth it. If you want to understand more about the men and women who put their lives on the line for us every day, then this is the show for you. And now your hosts, Chris, Scott, and Sean.
Today, Scott and I get together to cover a 2023 study that considers some of the best and worst places in the United States to work as a police officer. So if you're a listener considering a job in law enforcement, someone that's already on the job and considering a change, or you just want to know how your cops stack up with the rest of the country, this is a great episode for you.
The views and opinions expressed in this episode belong solely to the hosts and do not represent the views of any professional organization. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
You know, now that the high holidays of March are over.
Yeah, St. Patrick's Day was good this year.
Yeah, but you know what you don't need on St. Patrick's Day?
Electric cars.
No. Okay, all right. We'll get to that in a minute, so, I guess. You don't need a St. Patrick's Day Eve.
Eve, right, yeah.
It's one of those standalone holidays. Right. It's not like Christmas or, you know, New Year's.
Blackout Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
You don't need that. Like when St. Patrick's Day falls on a Sunday, we should treat it like Easter where we can change it, but we can buffer it. It's like the last... Mm-hmm. Like Wednesday of every March.
Slight adjustment is needed.
Yeah, so there's a buffer of maybe a little bit of responsibility on each side of it. Because by the time you get to Sunday afternoon on St. Patrick's Day, you're just like, whatever. I have no faith in humanity, and I'm ashamed that all of these people, this is how they think the Irish, you should
all,
be commemorating.
All the Pedialyte sold out at Walgreens.
Right. And every alleyway smells like a urinal, and like people. Like,
what great stop symbols of a holiday that close to our hearts.
Women are so is the mascara running off them? Like, you didn't bother going home, did you? When you see him out there as a cop, it's the worst because you're obviously we've talked about this with last year's show on St. Patrick's Day. It was the Irish tradition of policing and things that. But I'm just like, oh my God, we need to
let
this go, man.
I only need one day of corned beef, too. It's enough.
But when you got to work that holiday and you have a bar district where you work in your city, it is literally we don't need to seriously, somebody needs to sit down and say, all right, here's the deal. Mm-hmm. Hey, can we just throw it in the middle of the week and just make it a good day? And everybody at work goes, we're going to give you off for St. Patrick's Day. We're going to cut everybody out a little bit.
But you have to work tomorrow. So it's
you got to be in tomorrow. You know what I mean? Or at least or if you're going to burn time, you're going to end up burning 3 days as opposed to, hey, it's on Sunday this year. So if I take off Friday, I can be drunk on Thursday afternoon.
Then it's like Irish Mardi Gras.
Right, exactly. You know, finding a baby in a cake or something like that. What do they call that thing? That king cake or something like that? But I was just thinking, I can't wait to talk with you about it because I had to work it for the first time in kind of in a long time.
Seriously.
I was like, wow.
But people probably saw your name and they're like, oh, this is your holiday kind of thing, right? No, you get any
but when you're 12 feet up in the air, it's kind of nice because you're riding a horse, people, horses don't like drunks, just like sober people don't like drunks, just like it's a space thing for horses. Yeah. And they say, oh my God, the horse
loud
is
talking,
like literally, and the horse is just like, oh, what are you doing? Stop. And you smell funny. And, but anyway, we got through it. Pretty decent weekend in our fair city. But I was just like, holy mackerel. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But anyway, back to your electric car.
Yeah, I know. Thing. Sorry. That's my God. Got me going on that again. Oh, I know what it was. So, the story that I...
Hey, put away those left-handed scissors so you don't stab yourself, right?
The incentive that I saw today that popped up on my Instagram was zero financing for 6 years, plus money back to please, Ford saying, please buy our Mustang Mach-E electric car, which I don't even recognize. That's not recognized in our house as a Mustang. I'm a Mustang guy. I have a Mustang. Mustangs run on gas. Sorry, electric car friends. I'll give you your Teslas and whatnot, but leave Mustangs alone, okay? Mustangs are not electric.
Yeah, and pickup trucks too. Things out there.
Mustangs and pickup trucks. Like when you fire up a Mustang in your garage, your house should smell like gas.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows. Like I get it here, oh my God, can you turn the car off? It's like stinking up the whole first floor of the house. All right, sorry. But that's
and the idea of like a pickup truck, I mean, there's something that goes along with it. It's like it's the young man's mating call to have, like, you know, it's his plumage to drive around with a really loud exhaust, letting women know, I might not be well endowed, I do still have a pickup truck and I can help move your couch.
Like feathers on a peacock.
Those electric pickup trucks, they just kind of like creep up on you like a golf cart or something. I'm like, so I got to be honest, there's something really wrong with that. Beyond all the crap we're being fed about them, like the batteries are going to be wreak havoc to our environment. They wreak havoc to get them. They're going to wreak havoc when people don't want these cars anymore and they don't work. And they're going to probably end up polluting the planet way more than we've been led to believe. But again, we're in that era right now where everything is like, are we sure about this? It just seems to be coming so quickly and without any real, you know, order or reason. I don't know, man. I just every day, the guy from Hertz, the CEO from Hertz, you had talked about him. Mm-hmm. He's currently unemployed. Yeah. I'm sure he got a, you know, pretty decent severance package, but in the same sense, he had to leave because he lost them billions of dollars because buying into the whole electric car thing. And it's a rental company. So you would think like, you know, people are using the car for a weekend or so. That fell flat on its face because it's so, they're so hard to maintain and keep powered up. It's just like all these signs are out there, folks. Pay attention to this stuff. It's crazy.
Well, maybe that now he's without a job, maybe he would be interested in what we're talking about today. Maybe he's looking for a new career path. This could be it.
Maybe he's on Wallet Hub right now like I was. The only reason I was on there is because Police One posted this article from about a year ago, and it was titled, "The Best and Worst States to Be a Police Officer." That's always going to get a cop to click on it, no matter where they are, no matter how long they've been at it, because you want to see like where you stack up, and then you want to look at the veracity of it. And hats off to Wallet Hub for doing this stuff, the experts, that PhDs and stuff like that, that did this in-depth study of, you know, all of the factors that could impact where is the best place to work as a police officer. I looked at it and I was like, oh, that's cool that they're doing this. And then as soon as I looked at it, immediately I was kind of a little weary of it. Now, I looked at it since, and it makes me feel a little bit better about some of the things they're looking at. But the reason that I was like, I didn't really maybe put much credence to this is because the number one state to work in to be a police officer. You want to guess that one, Scott?
Well, I would not have guessed what it is, but I'll give it away that number one is, according to them, California.
Yeah. I was like, all right, what is it that, and that's where I started to dig in, because then number two was Washington, D.C. And if anybody knows anything about Washington, D.C., they're hemorrhaging cops.
Mm-hmm. And the crime is out of control.
A lot of the places that were in the top five are places where a lot of people are leaving, or like cutting out, leaving, going other places. So we'll dig a little bit into this and kind of talk about some of the things that they looked at.
Tell people the top five, I think, because this, like you said, this got me going, because when I saw the list before I saw the research behind it, it did a double take when just from looking the order of the states. But give them the top five.
Top five. Number one is California. Number two is the District of Columbia, not a state, but, you know, obviously up there. Number three is Connecticut, the lesser known tri-state of the tri-state area in New York. Maryland is number four. And drum roll, please, the place where we cut our teeth as police officers, Illinois, as the rest of the people say. It's, I used to say to people, that's Illinoising that you keep saying Illinois.
I got to use that.
When you got to about Illinois being in the top five, that's when you're like, I got to dig into this. Like I said earlier, let's look at the methodology of this as how they found some of these things out, because there's three different things, topics that they looked at. They're about each worth 33 1/3. The first one was opportunity and competition. The second was law enforcement training requirements. And then the third one was job hazards and protection. And apparently they have since removed the swimsuit competition, from what I understand. Kind of threw off the numbers. Drill down a little bit further into some of these things that these experts looked at with the methodology. Opportunity and competition, they looked at like how many officers there were per capita, the average starting salary for an officer, the median income for law enforcement officers, and the median income growth, the salary potential growth, the projected law enforcement officers per capita by 2030, those things. And then the training requirements was the next one, which we kind of found a little interesting, is that hours of training required was weighed heavily in it. You know, they weighed whether they allowed you to continue your education or whether you were compensated for that. Some of the other things were, you know, educational requirements, mental health and substance abuse and behavioral disorder training, whether that be for officers or the people that we're dealing with. And then one of the ones that I thought was really kind of unique to be added to this was the de-escalation training. Did your state require that for you? And then the job hazards and protections, police misconduct, confidentiality law, body-worn camera, investigations and prosecutions for use of deadly force by police officers, the officer decertification requirements. Are you required to carry Narcan? The degree of lethal force you're allowed to use? Are there red flag laws like on weapons in the state? Are there blue alerts? Are we allowed to pursue people? What are the number of deaths related to that? What are the number of deaths of police officers? The amount of people that are killed by the police per capita? And then violent crime rate, property crime rate, road safety. And then the sheriff homicide cases solved. And then another one that was interesting to me was the 911 calls delivered to local and regional answering points. And then there was also state and local police protection expenses per capita. So those are some of the things that they looked at and said, hey, if your state has these things or there's something with these things that surround this, this is how we're going to grade a lot of this stuff.
Like when you talk about Illinois, you know, just because that's my main place here, but the, yeah, wages are pretty good comparatively from what I think what you see like across the country. And, but you know, what comes with that? I mean, it's cost of living and taxes. I mean, taxes, our taxes here, property taxes, taxes on everything, goods and services, vehicles, homes, very high compared to other places across the country. I mean, you're talking about people that live in Illinois and pay, you know, five times the taxes that people are paying other places, and, you know, gas costs and just your everyday costs of things. So, yeah, I mean, yes, the pay is good, but again, you have to factor that in with what is your cost of living and where is that, where are those wages going, and whether you're being taxed and taxed on your pension and retirement, and all those factors are part of that too. And it's interesting too, one of the categories that you listed off, talking about the number of homicide cases solved. And again, when you're talking about Illinois, majority of your homicides are in Chicago County. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming when they looked at, you know, stats for homicide cases that are solved, I think you probably, and I think you probably have a better rate of those cases being solved maybe outside of Chicago and the Cook County metropolitan area. And when Illinois was ranked on that one, Illinois was number 49 out of 51, technically.
And yeah, that's a good place to kind of dig in a little bit on some of these bigger things so we can kind of get to that and then give you our thoughts on, you know, what you should consider. Because if you're someone listening to this and you're considering your career in law enforcement or you're already on the job and considering a change, some of these kind of things can kind of sway you. As you well know, you got to dig in on some stuff. And one of the points that Scott talked about, the percentage of homicide cases solved, the highest, the number one in the nation with North Dakota, followed by Maine, then Nebraska, Idaho, and Alaska. They solve apparently a lot of their homicides. Now, I don't know whether that has to do with the fact that they don't have as many or they have more resources or people are willing to cooperate with the police to help solve these crimes, or some of them more domestic related where it's a little bit more obvious than random crime like maybe in Chicago where no one's willing to talk to you at all. But the lowest were Rhode Island, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana. You know, the home of Notre Dame. Right. How does that happen? Right. And New Mexico was 51. So, I mean, those are places where, you know, it'd be interesting to see why those are some of the circumstances. But some of the other areas that they dug in on, and they give you some information, the areas that had the highest, or the states that had the highest amount of police officers per capita. Number one was D.C., two, New Mexico. It's really odd that they have that many cops and they're not solving that many homicides, but, you know, maybe it's just the way the state's broken down and how they do things. New York, Louisiana, and Texas rounded out the most cops per capita. The fewest were Utah, Iowa, Kentucky, Washington, and Oregon. A lot of that northwest, that part of the country. Median income, the highest was Illinois. When I lived in Illinois, I didn't feel that way. I'm going to tell you that right now to Scott's point. Washington State, Alaska, Pennsylvania, and Michigan rounded out the five there. And then the lowest were all in the southeast. Imagine that.
Mm-hmm.
you know, right to work states. Again, I'm not saying that we should start unionizing down here. Some states actually have in their constitution that you can't, but you get what you pay for. And I work for a place that's really doing well to kind of get people paid way better. Couldn't be more proud of the agency that I work for, but the lowest star in the Southeast, unfortunately. North Carolina, South Carolina, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Arkansas. And Arkansas came in dead last in everything pretty much. And, you know, it's pretty sad to see that a state is that bad off across the board. And then the violent crime rates are some of the other ones that people could understand. The lowest was in Maine, then New Hampshire. Vermont, Connecticut, and New Jersey, my home state.
Yeah.
Jersey, how do you like that? I mean, it's like, again, maybe a lot of Northeast states, people aren't violent up there. They're just obnoxious and they give you the finger and then they get it out and they don't want to kill you.
I mean, it's different. There's not a category.
And the highest, it was a five-way tie for 46 for the highest violent crime rates. Again, Arkansas is in there. Tennessee, New Mexico, Alaska, and District of Columbia. But remember, District of Columbia is number two to work at. State can be ranked really high per income, but then really, really low for, you know, hazards and protections. And it was neat to see some of that where, like, New Mexico was ranked fourth for opportunity and competition, but 51st in job hazards and protection. And like, I'm not very familiar with New Mexico, probably like most Americans. And I would be like, man, I wonder what it is like out there. What are the dynamics that cause some of that?
Thing too with Illinois, like I know I keep going back to the wages, but something to factor in here too. If people, those people who are looking for law enforcement jobs in Illinois, and I know people that are currently, I mean, it's, yes, there's good wages and there's a lot of great places and great agencies to work for in Illinois. But unfortunately, Illinois is always at the mercy of Chicago and Cook County. So that's something that you have to factor in, regardless of whether you work in the Chicago suburbs or you work out, you know, in further out west in a more rural area or way south, you know, way southern Illinois down near Kentucky, or state trooper that works out that way or anything along those lines. Is unfortunately a lot of the stuff that's driving this state comes out of Chicago and Cook County. And for those people who are looking to get into law enforcement in Illinois, there's a lot of things here that are changing for law enforcement, like no cash bond and the Safety Act, and that we haven't seen long term how these things are going to play out and what they're going to do to the law enforcement profession here and crime in general. And then what effect does that have? I mean, you don't see this in the stats, but you know that Illinois is a terrible place, you know, for new business and drawing businesses here, and businesses are leaving, people are leaving, property taxes are going up. So I'm not trying to like just completely bash Illinois or people that want to come here to start their law enforcement career, but those are realistic. This isn't like your job where, hey, I'm in IT or I'm in sales or something, and I work for this company for 5 years and maybe I move, I get transferred. You're talking about people who are making a commitment to work for a community in theory for 20, 25, 30, even now with the tiered pension system, maybe more than 30 years. So you have to be thinking about that as a new person getting into this career. Like, okay, yeah, maybe I'm looking at suburbs that have relatively low crime and they pay pretty well, but what is this going to look like for me and my family and everything else 20, 25 years down the road? So nothing's for sure, but don't look too much further than the things that come out of Chicago and Cook County, because they have a significant impact on the rest of the state. Not to mention a big thing now is the state trying to mess with the pension funds too, and consolidate pension funds and everything that goes into that. So a lot of things to be cautious of. Don't just be blinded by the, pay and this and everything. It pays everything. You know, pay isn't everything all the time.
Because I'll tell you this is what I think, when they inevitably mismanage that money and they have to come back to old pensioners and say, well, we can't pay you anymore. I don't think it's beyond any politician at this point to do that. But in the same sense, what they're going to do is say, well, we need to try to protect these people because, you know, they're old and they're, you know, whatever. They'll take it out on the current workers and they'll say, hey, we're just going to flip you guys into a 401, 457, maybe this state system that maybe gives you 1% of a match or whatever. That's what happened. And then the other thing I'll tell you is training and where you're at now. You could go to some place and make some really good money, union money. But also the other thing, the flip side of unions is, other than protecting you, they also allow you to kind of maybe be a slug at times. You know what I mean? There are, you know, if enough of the union body says, we don't want to worry about this training, we don't want to worry about this fitness level, we don't want to do this stuff, training can be impacted by that. When you look at the this link, you can go on there and you can really manipulate the data a little bit to kind of look at it for things that you're interested in. And I never had access to this and never would have known, you know, those kind of things. This is helpful in that mm-hmm. sense. But the worst was, believe it or not, Hawaii was dead last for training requirements. Yeah.
That's why Dog the Bounty Hunter never got in the police academy.
Is that what it was? Right.
He couldn't pass the training.
Wow, I couldn't pass the training. It was the lowest requirement possible. So what's that saying about Dog?
Hello? Okay, this is Dog.
And then there's Alaska. You finished out with North Dakota, Nevada, and Alabama are the states that had the lowest training requirements out there of some of those criteria that we looked for. But then when you look at some of the ones with the best, where Connecticut was number one, California was number two, D.C. was number three, and Tennessee was number four, and then Ohio was number five. So, you know, you're looking at some of those things when you're making that move. Now, again, a lot of people are leaving Ohio for other reasons. So to Scott's point, although I may go there and get some really great training, there could be a lot of other factors from a socioeconomic standpoint that impact my quality of life, both inside and outside of the job. And then the final topic was the opportunity and competition, which is probably the thing that really, when you get down to it, like, people like money, I get it, but the opportunity competition is really what piques a cop's interest. Like, what are my chances to grow professionally? You know, how competitive is it to get a job within this organization that kind of breaks up the monotony of my life and my career? Because as you know well, local law enforcement by the state level, people stay in these jobs for 20 to 30 years. Those things really matter, even though you can't like tangibly get your arms around them until you get into the organization. If everybody's leaving, of course, there's going to be opportunities for you. You got guys in a lot of places now that have less than 2 years on the job and are moving into positions that, you know, normally in the well-staffed and, you know, appreciated police world, it took you close to 10 years to get some of these gigs. And my current agency has a lot of young people, but I'm sure our agency's not alone. And you got to put people in jobs. They got to learn and, hey, you know, birth by fire, so to speak. So opportunities and competition, I mean, you know, competition to get jobs, competition amongst agencies, things like that. It was a little like of a mystery to me because although it does this by state, what this really comes down to is what's happening in that individual agency. You could be a top paid agency, but the opportunities to grow could really suck because your boss hates you. And he has a right because you have no union to perpetually mess with you. As I was told when I first got down here, I can fire you on the spot and I don't have to have any reason for it. And I'm proud of that fact. And I was just like, well, okay, talk about employee development.
A motivator.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah right.
Did they teach you that in de-escalation?
Yeah, right. No, they must have taught you at the National Academy because God knows that was all hanging up. So much for that. You know, good gig, good opportunity, really unique experience. I can be fired because you just don't like me. And that's real. That's very real. Kathy Diaz came on our show and talked about that stuff, about rural and remote policing and how these rules don't apply when you're living outside of the confines of a large union environment or even a big enough city that actually has good labor practices because the city's tired of getting sued. Or the constant turnover of employees, which is a huge drain on morale, motivation, opportunities, growth, as well as cost to get a cop fully trained and up to speed. Those are some things to think about when you're considering this stuff. And I found it really fascinating. And I was almost a little bit like, are any of these people really cops? Because none of this mentioned anything about leadership, climate.
Well, even here, you're seeing at police agencies all over the northern part of Illinois, people that I know at different agencies, their testing and application numbers are down all over the place. Yeah. Maybe not huge, but most agencies are just seeing less people, you know, and now you're seeing a lot more of the lateral hires coming out, you know, a lot of people coming out of like Chicago and stuff and going to suburban agencies, but just not nearly as many people taking the test, not near as many people as when we first tested almost, you know, 20 some years ago. And, you know, when you talk about pay and like how the, you know, what the pay scales are like in the Southeast, you know, we don't want to pay these officers because we don't think that they should make X amount of dollars, but we want to continue to make them, you know, certified in de-escalation. We want to provide them training in mental health and substance abuse and behavioral disorders, like this, the things that the categories that they're using in this list. So it's like, well, you can't have it both ways. If you want these people to be these highly trained, well-qualified people that are able to handle a variety of situations for your community, well, you have to pay them, you know? I mean, it's, and I know it's not the same as the private sector where, you know, in the private sector, hey, if I do this job this great, I might get a bonus or I get this pay increase or whatever. Whereas our profession, hey, I get paid just the same as the laziest person standing next to me if I'm right. Union. My only motivation might be my just self-motivation to do a good job. But you have to look at that. Like, you have to make an investment in this, regardless of where these, how they rank these communities and all these things. These are all the things that people want in their communities. They want highly trained officers in a variety of discipline. They want officers that can de-escalate, you know, tense situations. We face so much more now with mental health and drug abuse and all this other stuff that is really stuff that we've always handled, but it's come more to the forefront over the last, I don't know, 10 years or so. So with that, you have to be, these states have to be willing to say, you know what, money that's being wasted over here, we need to spend on this. We want highly trained, well-qualified people to come be our police officers that are going to, and we want them to stay. It's like retention too. Like,
right.
I want to hire you and I want you to spend your whole career working for this agency. I want to give you ongoing training. I want to give you advancement opportunities. I want you to stay here because you're making an investment in these people. And so, if you're not willing to say, hey, yes, we need to train them well, and hey, not everybody's going to always be the highest paid agency. I get it. Like, somebody's always going to make more than you, but you're going to attract more people, better people with better pay and with better opportunities. You know, I mean, it's the way it is. So I'm not saying everybody's going to increase their police officer pay, you know, 50% in the next year, but it's just something to think about when you talk. You want those things from your people and you want to attract the best people to do that and the people that you want to keep long-term working for your agency.
And I think, you know, like Travis Yates talks about, leadership is a thing that is money in pockets. I mean, it's money. It keeps you out of civil liability. It keeps people retained, mm-hmm. whatever. That needs to be factored into the type of person that's running your police department, or, you know, that doesn't stand up for what's right. They just stand up for what's right for them and their career progression hurts our profession. It really does. I mean, while we're hemorrhaging, we're talking about all of the different things that are happening out in the world. Like, the people don't like us, which is bull. By and large, most people do like us. We've talked about that at length in this show. It's the vocal minority that gets to kind of rule the day, but our leaders need to be brave and stand up to that. We don't have brave leaders anymore. Everybody's concerned about being called a name and said that they were doing this for these reasons. No one has the guts to do it. And then I was really proud when the commissioner of New York City and the Seattle police chief, both black females, who people would say, oh, they got their jobs because they were black females. When they saw political leaders turning on their officers and their agencies, they said, you can keep this job. We lost quality people out of that process. And I don't know what kind of message it sent to those politicians, whether they just got a patsy in the place behind them. I have no idea. But the bottom line is that those people had the guts to say, and I think that's the kind of things that people will say, hey, if they back my leader like that, they're going to back me like that. Our job is hard. We make mistakes. We see things that no one else sees. We have to make decisions at levels that most people don't. And it's been underappreciated and undervalued both internally and externally to the profession. And I think leadership is one of these things that now needs to be factored in. How much is that part of considered your growth and opportunity? It didn't really seem that there was a lot in there that could make tangibles about that. And I think we create administrators. I just don't think we create leaders in the police world. We create people that, you know, get to a certain spot, and it's usually the sergeant. And then it kind of dies out there. Every now and then, like, you find this gem of a lieutenant that you enjoy working for. Like, I'm fortunate to be in that circumstance probably for the first time in a long time in my career. And it's like, wow. I mean, they're just really good people to work for. And that's key to keeping people around. Because at any point, Scott, guys our age, we can just be like, you know what? Screw it. I'm out. And plenty of people will hire me. I can go do some real easy job somewhere. But if you got a boss that's really wanting you to get up, even after 24 years of doing this, that's good stuff. It really is. And I think it matters to the quality of life. And you should, as an officer looking to get into an agency, ask those pointed questions of police officers. If they feel that they can't answer that, they feel that you shouldn't be asking that question, don't go to that agency, because that's just a matter of, well, I'm not going to tell you what I really think of the boss. Well, then you already know if the guy ain't going to tell you what he thinks of the boss. And that should be assigned to you. And leadership should be held accountable at level, like recruiting numbers and everything else. And it'll make people probably stand up and hopefully improve the situation that we've got other than just your compensation.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I would encourage people, again, like we were talking about, I would encourage people that are looking to get into this profession to take a look at this information that we're talking about today. It's not going to necessarily make or break your decision. It's just interesting to look at what things were weighted in this. And even for those people who are not in this profession, maybe where you live in the country, take a look at this and see what they factored in, and where your state fits in, and all these numbers and statistics that they brought together today. So it's not the end all be all, but definitely an interesting snapshot of the information that they used to categorize the best and worst states to be a cop.
Yeah, it's good stuff. We'll put it in the show notes. Please check it out. And if you want to get a hold of us for any reason, you know how to do that. It's through our Gmail account, which is 3copstalk@gmail.com. This past week, we had somebody reach out to us to get a hold of a past guest that was looking for a job. Can't thank you enough for that. Got you hooked up right away, and hopefully you're getting the answers that you can. Anywhere where you listen to podcasts, please go like, listen, share with a friend, download, subscribe. Leave us a review. We really appreciate it. Anything you want to find out about our show, whether you want to be a guest, sponsor, host, join us every now and then. We'll take a third seat here, because obviously Chris had a kind of, was the Sizzler tonight? Is that what it was, Scott?
Yeah.
It was prime rib. Prime rib on the end.
The reservation was made 3 months ago.
That's how long this takes down there.
We miss you, Chris.
We miss you, Chris. But that being said, folks, pay attention. If you're making a decision about being a cop, check this thing out. It might help you a little bit. Got any questions, let us know. Until then, be safe. We'll talk to you soon.